Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is John. I'm joined by Charlie and Kayla today.
Hello.
Hi.
We're going to be talking about some linguistics.
And food.
Those of you who might not be familiar with linguistics, but are familiar with food, hopefully we'll be able to teach you something. We'll see what happens. We'll see how it goes. So the idea of Food for Thought is that we're all students in a class called Linguistics and Food right now.
Food and Language.
Oh, is it called Food
it's
and
food
Language?
It's Food and Language.
That's okay. So we're in a class called Food and Language right now. And the idea of it is trying to figure out the intersection between, well, food and language. Basically, we look at how food comes up in our lives, in our conversations, in our socialization, in our culture, and then we analyze what role language plays in how it's impacting us.
Yeah.
And so the goal for this podcast is basically to try and hone in on various, you know, aspects of that intersection and deep dive into why things are why there. And so
And there's this whole sort of underbelly of the social world of food that might not be apparent at first glance, but it plays such an important role in food and even in our whole lives.
And it's really varied. You could have this episode we're going to be talking about advertising, but there's also, you know, if you ever hear like influencers talking about food on social media or on YouTube or even conversations that you have with your family or your friends in your day-to-day life about food, it's all related and there's all relationships that you can see with food and language.
Yeah. So hopefully we help expand your mind a little bit and make you at least a little bit more aware of like the foodie things going on around you and how it's impacting you. So today we're going to talk about advertising and how food intersects with socioeconomic class and the sort of marketing language that goes into that. So to do that, we've each brought a little thing to talk about, and it's going to be fun because we don't really know the specific details on what each other brought. We're going a little bit off the cuff.
It's a very risky first episode.
Very risky, but it gives a good flavor to it. Get it?
Food puns abound.
If the title of the podcast is a pun, you knew what you were getting into if you're
listening to this. The majority of this podcast should be food puns, and that's my take on it.
Okay, let's strive for that goal. I'm not sure how it's going to go, but hopefully we're clever enough. Who wants to go first? What have we brought?
I think that Kayla wants to go first, actually.
You think that I want to go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like you told me that.
All right. Oh my gourd. There's food pun number one.
Oh God.
All right.
Okay.
So
here we go.
Yeah. So what I brought a meme.
You brought a meme.
I brought a meme.
Nice.
I went out and I harvested this meme. It's a ripe meme.
I cannot deal with you right now. I truly cannot.
All right. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen these, but they are...
I've seen memes.
Yeah, seen memes. There are specific memes that are in, like, a food, like, genre of cooking shows. So I don't know if you've ever seen these specific ones, but it's very funny. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to describe the meme, and you will tell me what food you think is being described, and that I think will be kind of fun, and then we can go into the actual linguistics and stuff about this food description. So the text for this says, I made a pureed nut spread with a grape relish reduction paired with a sliced brioche bun. So what do you think they're talking about?
A pureed nut bread.
Pureed nut spread with a grape relish paired with a sliced brioche bun.
Peanut butter and jelly. Classic PB&J.
Yes! It is peanut butter and jelly. So that was a very fun way to describe peanut butter and jelly. And what is like interesting about this is because they're trying to make fun of those cooking shows where, you know, like Chopped or like, I don't know, Master Chef or whatever it is, where you have the chefs and they're like cooking something and then they present it to the judge, but it's always like, ah, yes, I did this very complicated thing. I pureed nut spread instead of just calling it peanut butter. So they're elevating the food that they have with this like language to make it sound more, you know, I guess like, so what I compare this to is authenticity, which we went over in class.
Let's dive into authenticity and kind of talk about it.
Yeah.
So the basic idea is that food marketers, they use specific language when they're packaging foods of different prices. And there's this interesting study by Joshua Friedman and Dan Jurafsky called Authenticity in America. And what this found is basically different price ranges of food were more likely to use specific appeals to different kinds of what's called authenticity in their product labels.
Often these companies will use different phrases like, say if we're looking at like potato chips, some food manufacturers will use words like from a family recipe, or they'll use like specific people, like grandma used to make or something like that. Whereas sort of more expensive potato chips will use things like, they'll often describe the region where the potato comes from, like Yukon gold potatoes or something of that nature.
Yeah, so I think they go into four, so in the article, I think they go into four different types of authenticity, which, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but they go into like naturalness, they talk about the ingredients, they talk about the historical nature of the product, and they talk about where it's actually located. So there's really, you know, two kind of groups that I kind of formulated when I was reading this paper. You have the like historic authenticity, which is, you know, the historical factors and the locality. I kind of combine those together in my head. And then you have like natural authenticity, which is talking about natural ingredients, real ingredients, nothing artificial. Those were the two big distinctions I had. And what they had in this paper was that each authenticity appealed to a different social class.
So basically the conclusion was that the more expensive products were more likely to appeal to the health side of things, the natural authenticity, meaning how it, like the ingredients in it are good for you. They exclude gluten, or they're organic, etc. Regardless of really the actual impact of these things in the food, or the actual health benefits of them, they're more likely to just bring them up because the expectation is that the higher income households culturally are more attuned to that or more interested in that. Meanwhile, the traditional authenticity is the appeal to hominess and geography. You know, it's homemade, it's sort of rustic, it's in the tradition of the culture. That's more likely to appear on cheaper foods, or that more lower income households usually buy. So getting back to the meme.
Yes. So I mean, I think that I thought it was really interesting because considering our discussion, you have what is very run-of-the-mill food. You have peanut butter and jelly. That could apply to anyone. It is a, you know, the food that anyone can make. It's not limited by class distinctions. You know, of course, you could have more expensive peanut butter or more expensive jelly when you're making it, but basically a run-of-the-mill food that, with the language used in the meme, is instead of calling it what it is, a peanut butter and jelly, they use the language to make it sound more like something that would be advertised as a, you know, a food for a higher economic class, something that you would pay money for. It'd be expensive. Like you'd read this on a menu, and if you weren't really sure exactly that it was peanut butter and jelly, you'd say, "Ooh, that like sounds really interesting. It has those words that stick out to you, like pureed and relish reduction. brioche bun, like, those are descriptions that you see, and you're, you know, those are, I don't know, what kind of, like, food buzzwords.
Yeah. So I guess moving along with, like, the dichotomy of natural and traditional authenticity that we've been talking about, I have an example that I brought in, which I found pretty interesting. So I have two bottles of syrup in my house right now, because
maple syrup.
Some in my, but I'm maple sorry. Maple syrup. What? Maple syrup.
Nice.
Because some in my household prefer the sort of synthetic, very, like, I mean, they're both quite sugary, but some prefer the synthetic kind of fake maple syrup, and some prefer the more expensive kind of supposedly more authentic, like, naturally made maple syrup, and the latter is more expensive to buy. So I thought it was kind of interesting. I looked at the packaging on both, and the first one is like a little above $4. It's this Vermont made maple syrup bottle, and it has, you know, it has the big Vermont made logo on it.
Is it
has
the Trader Joe's one?
I'm not sure. I think, oh, okay. I got it, like,
because I know the Trader Joe's one is like Vermont, like, classic, even though it's cheap.
Yeah,
it's like,
and it has like Vermont. The prairie in the background, yeah. Right? Yeah. And it's like, as the and it says original in big bold letters, mm-hmm. on the bottom, and etc. And but then you have this Sam's Club Member's Mark, like, organic maple syrup, which is like significantly more expensive. It's probably like $10-$11.
I love Sam's Club, by the way. It's great.
Nice. Plug for Sam's Club.
Plug for, actually, Sam's us. Club is our sponsor. Yeah. For today's episode.
Sam's They're Club not. Can be our first sponsor.
But they should be.
The invitation's there.
Yeah. We need 20,000 listeners to get a sponsor, supposedly.
Yeah.
That's the magic number, so share the podcast. Anyway, so we have these two maple syrup bottles, and the second one, the more expensive one, it's got very different sort of design on the bottle. It's very ornate looking, or at least ornate for a syrup bottle. It has sort of,
is complex it glass designs around or it. Plastic?
It's not glass, it's plastic, it's not black. But it's like a plastic. Black, it's this black label with like engravings, or not engraving looking designs all around it. I know podcasting is a famously visual medium, so it's a good thing that we're doing it this way. But and then it has organic on the top, and then 100% pure, grade A dark, etc. And so you can see by sort of appealing to that, using those phrases, it's really appealing to a different sensibility than the, you know, Vermont prairie, how your great grandma, like, used to make pancakes, that sort of vibe.
Is the other one in plastic? Sorry, I'm harping on this. I'm just fascinated.
They're indeed both.
They're both made plastic. Of plastic. Okay, one so is I was clear very interested. One is clear.
So, yeah. So the cheaper one is a clear plastic bottle. The more expensive one is an opaque plastic bottle.
Interesting.
How does that play into your calculus here?
I don't know. So here's the thing with why I'm stuck on the glass. I'm stuck on the glass because I feel like the, like, in terms of what we've learned and what I just know from life, in terms of, like, more expensive products now, wanting to be more sustainable, wanting to be more eco-friendly, you would think that they would have more glass packaging, and that would be a signifier of, not a language signifier, but it would be a signifier of the quality and the ingredients and, you know, the effort that they're putting into their product. So that was where I was getting at with the glass. I'm fascinated, though, that this one is opaque, because it feels like they're hiding their product. Like, that seems like they're hiding the syrup, and they don't want you to know what's in there, which I think is really interesting. I would expect it to be more, you know, transparent and open about what it is, but it's hiding itself.
I also feel like glass products are just like fancier. Like, have you guys ever like drank those like those glass Coke bottles?
I do. I love those. Those are my favorite.
I love them.
Second sponsor is Coke. It's,
yeah, like it's the same thing, but like you just feel so much better drinking it. You feel like fancier. You feel cooler.
So maybe that's that actually gets to one theory that I might have just formulated is maybe they're hiding it in the opaque bottle so that you can't see how like profoundly similar it is to all the rest of the syrup on the shelf. Because I bet if it was in a clear bottle and you could see it, you'd look at the Vermont Made and you'd look at the Member's Mark and just see like almost the same product.
Yeah, so these are both in your house? Now?
Yes, they
are. Okay, have you tried both of them? Is one like do you
I have.
I'm sure you have a preference.
I prefer it depends on the day really. So I was getting at with the preference is that like ever since my brother went to college in Vermont, he suddenly became a syrup connoisseur and needed real maple syrup, even though we, you know, have been growing up with the cheaper one.
Where are you from?
A while. I'm from Connecticut.
Connecticut, okay.
Yeah, so he went to Vermont and like decided that he was the maple syrup king now.
I mean, honestly, that's what I want.
Yeah?
That's all I wanted, maple syrup.
Do you want like maple syrup like queen status? What's going on?
I'm just here. I'm just interested. Maple syrup is great. I personally cannot eat pancakes or French toast without maple syrup. However, I don't have like a very particular preference wise between like quality. I don't think I just don't like the ones that put butter into it. And I know this is completely unrelated to our current discussion, but the ones like made with butter, just I don't know. They don't.
I'm interested to hear how often do y'all eat maple syrup?
So I don't like maple syrup that much. But
oh my goodness! Almost get off this podcast.
But I do love like maple butter.
Worst nightmare. Not syrup. It's just like maple butter.
No, no, no. It's butter, but it has like it's sort
so
of like
maple butter
maple
and not
syrup.
Butter
it's
syrup.
It's like sweet butter. Yeah.
Okay, that I can live with. That's fine.
It's really good.
I don't think I've ever had that before. To be completely honest,
it's fantastic.
Huh? What were we talking about?
You're talking about your brother, who's the maple syrup king.
Oh, right.
So yes.
Okay. So he likes the fancy stuff. I usually just go for the whatever is available to me, and we just happen to have both in the house, so it varies.
Mm-hmm.
But
so they do. They are like, but how do they taste very similar? Do they taste very different?
Oh, right. That's what we're. That's why we were bringing it up.
Yeah.
So they, the expensive one tastes sweeter, I'd say.
Okay.
It's less viscous than the fake stuff is, and it's sweeter and maybe like woodier, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
At least in my mind.
It's got like an oaky taste.
Like maple that's taste. That's the vibe that I get from it.
I wonder if the viscosity sort of plays into its status, because like if you put maple syrup on a pancake and it just kind of like plops there, rather than like if it like flows along the pancake, like I would pay extra for that.
Would you?
Yeah, for a less viscous syrup, for sure.
Fair enough. Charlie, do you have a thing you'd like to share with us?
Oh, yes, I had a really good transition for this, actually, because you were talking about
Let's do this transition.
Okay.
The floor is yours.
So, John, you were talking about how there were different labels on the syrup and how, like, one of them emphasizes something, like, says organic. The more expensive one says organic. So, here's my question. What does that even mean? And here we go. That's my fun transition.
Well, I actually don't have anything for organic, but what I did...
Everyone here for that quality transition.
The transition that did nothing.
So, in relation to that syrup, I looked at some food labels, and obviously there are countless food labels, so I just sort of specified it to chickens, and especially like egg-laying hens. And you'll often see that these different qualifications and these different labels have different prices, and they appeal to different people. So if we look at chickens, the first, and there's sort of this hierarchy of kind of cruelty, of like what you can do to chickens to meet these like minimum qualifications. So we're gonna look at cage-free first. So how much space do you think a cage-free chicken needs to have to qualify as cage-free? In square feet.
Oh, I bet it's dramatically lower than I think it is.
3 square feet? Because I don't know. I think cages are tiny. So I'm going to 3 square feet, and that's enough. But honestly, that makes me so sad, because if it is 3 square feet, then it's like, that's just a bigger cage. Everything, if you think about it, is just a bigger cage. Even if you have, even if you have like a fence, if they're fenced
in. Hold up. Everything is a bigger cage.
The whole world is a cage.
That's some mid-quarantine philosophy for you right there.
It really, you know, we've been in this house for how long? Everything feels like a cage. I have this whole apartment. You know, I'm free to roam about it, but really it's just a huge cage.
That speaks to me.
Society is a cage. Anyway.
Society is a cage.
John,
guess? We live in a society, just so you know.
We do live in a society. What is your guess, square footage?
My guess, I'm going to be a little more optimistic and say like 5 square feet.
So, it is actually 1 square feet.
No!
For a cage-free chicken.
No!
And these chickens also do not necessarily have outdoor access. Yeah. Okay. So, with cage-free, they cannot be in a cage, but you'll just have a lot of chickens together, right? So they won't have any sort of personal space. They'll be kind of cramped in these.
Yeah, these is there a density calculation into this? Is this like per chicken that you need to have?
Yeah,
like,
this is per chicken.
So one chicken needs to have at least more than 1 square foot of space to be cage-free, or you can stuff as many chickens as you want into.
No. One chicken needs to have 1 square foot.
Okay. Oh, no.
All right, okay, that's fine.
But 1 square foot is also about the size of a chicken, so...
Oh.
Yeah.
I still don't like it. Everything is a cage, but, you know, at least you're shoving chickens
it's
into...
It's not great. And this means that these chickens also don't have outdoor access, even though they're cage-free.
They don't have outdoor access.
They do not. So that they can and do spend their whole lives in darkness, mostly, even if they're cage-free.
My world has been turned upside down. I did not know this. This is so sad. Yeah. Okay.
And then we get to sort of this next tier, which is free range. How much space would you guys say free range?
They should have a field. There should be no cages. They should have a field.
They should be living on that prairie that's pictured on the Vermont-made syrup bottle.
Yeah, they should be living on that prairie. Maybe there's a fence, so maybe they just have a huge cage and it's fine. But they should have an open air situation.
Right. Okay. So
what's the reveal here?
Yeah.
These free range chickens have double the space of cage free chickens, so 2 square feet of space.
Okay.
And these chickens, the USDA says, in order to be free range, chickens must be allowed access to the outside. But what a lot of farmers will do is they'll keep these chickens completely inside, in these dark conditions, and they'll poke a little hole out of these barns so that they can poke their heads out, so that they'll technically have this access to the outside.
They just have like a little chicken window that they can poke their head out of?
Yeah.
That is awful.
Why? Yeah. This is, I don't know. I feel like they should not be able to put that label on there if that's what they're doing. My idea of this was so distorted. I don't know. I really thought that they'd like just be like out and about, like living their chicken lives, but wow.
And then...
Oh, go ahead.
Is there another distinction? Okay. So which eggs should I be buying?
there's a next tier, right?
Okay.
And this is like...
Three square feet of space.
So, pasture raised, which I've never even seen before.
I'm guessing
it's not economic for farmers. Because each hen must have at least 108 square feet of space.
108?
Okay, so that's like...
Yeah. That's the prairie. That's where they're
that's
living.
That's like actual
prairie.
Yeah. That's like what we think is happening.
Yeah. Right.
And I guess that's why we've never seen it before, also.
Weird.
Yeah, exactly. Never.
See, and I feel like there should be more distinctions with this. Like, I don't know. There are,
but these are sort of the
main ones. Okay, because there's, like, a chicken farm by my house, and they had, like, a coop. And they were in the coop, so I don't know what they classified as. I don't know how much square feet each chicken had. But they had a coop, and then they had a backyard. And the backyard was fairly large, you know, suburban backyard. And initially, they were, like, not fenced in the backyard. But this later became a problem because it was located next to a major road, and there were some chickens who were ended up, unfortunately, being roadkill. So, like, they were initially marketed as, I think, cage-free or free-range because there was no fence, and that was, like, the whole appeal of these chickens was that they, like, didn't have a fence, but, you know, they could walk into the road, and, you know, that would be unfortunate. So they did end up putting up a fence. I just don't remember if they had to, like, if they changed their label or not, but I guess they didn't have to because they still had access to the outdoors. I don't know, but I feel like that's, like them at least being in the backyard is a tier above, you know, a chicken window.
Right.
I'd say so. I don't know.
And then
let's dive a little bit into, like, so here's my assumption of where this is going. Are the cage free, and is there a price difference between each of these different kinds of labels?
Yeah, generally.
And are these labels only appearing on, like, the more expensive eggs?
Yeah. So what I was gonna say next is what caged means.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh no.
Uh oh.
Yeah.
Oh no.
All right. Here we go.
Okay. So, for a caged chicken, and also, let it be noted that they're not going to say caged. I don't know what they'll say. I guess egg, poultry, something general.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the basic eggs that I purchased say. I think they just say eggs.
I imagine that if they only met the qualifications of caged, then they wouldn't even bother advertising that.
Right. But, I mean, but there are minimum qualifications just to be able to have chickens in general.
Fresh eggs,
yeah,
perhaps.
Fresh.
Okay. Well, that's maybe where you get into the distinction of, like, white and brown eggs, or, like, fresh white eggs or white eggs. Right. Which I don't think there is a difference. Let's go back to the cages.
I honestly don't know enough about eggs.
I don't know enough about eggs either. I thought I did. I clearly don't.
Okay. So what do you guys think is the minimum requirement of space for just owning a commercial chicken? Chicken farm or whatever.
So to be, like, a humane individual owning a chicken, how much space do you have to give it?
Yeah, to meet USDA qualifications.
To sell the eggs or just to keep the chicken?
Half a square foot.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna say, half a square foot.
Yeah, it's around there. It's a little less. It's 0.46 square feet.
0.46 square feet.
Which is essentially smaller than a chicken. Especially these larger poultry chickens, which are bred to be eaten.
Who's doing these measurements? So, who's, like, the king of, you know, yes, chickens deserve this much space, and that's my decree.
Yeah,
who is the chicken overlord? I want to know.
I'll find him, and I'll challenge him.
We'll bring him on the podcast.
Yeah. All right. So here's the invitation to the chicken overlord. You're welcome to the podcast. Please tell us about your requirements for these chickens and why this was happening.
Right. And in these spaces, chickens obviously can't spread their wings or anything like that. And then I have one term for cows that I thought was interesting. Because I used the example of chickens, but there are obviously, you know, many different varieties of this with different animals. So the government actually used to have an official definition of the term grass-fed, but now they don't, right? So now it's pretty much completely open for interpretation. So grass-fed means whatever you want it to mean, essentially. And I'd also like to point out, fun fact, corn is actually a type of grass.
Oh.
Right.
And that's bad. So, I know that's bad for cows. This is me as a person who doesn't really eat red meat at all because of the impact on the animals. But I know that corn is, like, a big thing that they feed to cows to, like, fatten them up.
Beef them up.
? But if they can qualify that as grass-fed...
Like, beef them up. That was another fun, though.
Yeah, if they can qualify
beef,
that as grass-fed...
Beef them up?
Beef them up. There you go. Pun number two.
Oh.
If you can qualify them as grass-fed, then that's like, that's what I, you know, see as being advertised. Ooh, like grass-fed. It's like fancier and more expensive. But if it's just corn, then it's like, that's what all the cows are getting.
Right.
So I guess all these labels to like appeal to your sense of like, maybe these eggs are healthier because of the conditions the chickens were raised in. Or maybe I'm like being a more conscious consumer because I'm, you know, purchasing eggs which seem to be coming from chicken producers who treat their chickens well.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, or it's just, it goes into the quality. It could be just ingredients and naturalness. Like, oh, because they're being treated better, this is going to taste better in some way. You know, because it's like had a happier life, or, you know, just having a good time in whatever square foot of space it's been given, the eggs will be more delicious somehow.
Yes. The magic.
The magic. The magic of the extra square foot.
Exactly. Or whatever, 0.54. So I think that we can extrapolate that not only do these terms not mean a lot, but this concept of sort of humane slaughter or sort of cruelty-free meat also don't mean a lot, even though they might incur higher prices depending on whether or not they have these labels or not.
Yeah, that's the other thing I don't believe in. I don't believe in that. I don't believe that there's a humane way to kill something. But that's just me.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you guys eat meat?
I do.
Okay, you do. All right.
Yeah. So going back to like the natural and traditional authenticity thing, I imagine that all those labels are the eggs are probably going to be more expensive because, or they're going to be advertised that way to try and appeal to that natural authenticity of showing what's in the egg, etc. Barring the ethics of it, obviously, because we just talked about that.
Yeah.
Whereas,
even though you might think that you're being ethical, your research, it's fine.
But the cheaper eggs are probably going to appeal to, you know, the rustic image of like this homey farm in like the American Midwest or the Great Plains, etc. Like make that geographic appeal.
Well, that's what the language is trying to do. Like, it's trying to appeal to, I think, what a lot of people maybe like naively think about where their food is coming from. You know, you have, everyone has that, like you just said, everyone has that idealized version of, oh, you know, local farm, whatever, this is, you know, small business, ethical, something, like obviously they have a good life or whatever. But because of the, you know, the way that the terms are worded, like if you just take the terms as they are, cage free, you know, you not in a cage, that would be, you know, the basic, I think, linguistic understanding
one would think.
Yeah, but that's not what it is, and that's, you know, really, I think, misleading and goes into that marketing idea of, you know, if you have some, you know, person who doesn't know what these terms mean, they hear cage free and they think, all right, that's not in a cage, you know, why? So like the confusion there is just something that I think it just plays into it, just the language of what it is. You know, I think, you know, maybe a kept in a 2-square-foot pen is not as catchy as cage free.
It's not.
But you know, chicken window isn't as catchy. Maybe that'd be fun. I want to start seeing chicken window eggs.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
Another pun. Peeps. Birds.
Or just the new brand of eggs is going to be the world is a cage, and that's.
The world
eggs.
Is a cage.
The world is a cage.
I think that could be like the name of this episode.
Yeah,
like,
the world is a cage.
That's
gonna be our first T-shirt. We're gonna have T-shirts, and it's gonna say "the world is a cage," and that'll be our first merch. Yeah, the world is a cage. That's our first quote. It's for the merch.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty good. Let's wrap up a little bit. Let's go over what we've learned or what we've talked about. So
I brought up some memes. We
started with some memes.
Started
went
with some
maple
memes.
Syrup.
Went to maple syrup.
Closed it off with some chickens.
Yeah. If you put it all together, so you get a healthy breakfast.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Kinda. That's pretty good. This is the breakfast episode with a side of memes.
Yeah, Breakfast with the Side of... That's the other option for a title. Breakfast with the Side of Memes or The World is a Cage. Take your pick.
Oh, I like that. If you put it these all together, are, these you are all good also options.
Also sort of just get a sticky, sort of immobile chicken.
Yeah. So I think... Well, maybe what we didn't maybe get into as much in terms of the overall, like, expensive stuff of it is, like, people are being fooled into buying this stuff.
Yeah. Society's a cage.
You know, the language on food is a lie. Is it?
Yeah, so I guess when you're going out to the store and making purchases, just take a second look and, like, check out what is the label appealing to. Why are you drawn to, you know, one bottle of maple syrup over the other bottle, or one thing of eggs over the other, or one meme over the other when you're in the meme aisle?
Yeah.
And you might just remember from Food for Thought.
Yeah.
Oh, look, that's appealing to my sense of natural authenticity.
Yeah.
Or maybe you won't. But whatever you take away from this podcast.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, people, I don't know. I mean, I know that I definitely now want to think about, like, these food labels a bit more, especially in terms of, not that I, like, purchase a lot of meat products, but eggs are one of the, you know, animal products that I do buy. And that'll be something that I definitely want to, like, now explore more about and look into, because I think it's so, like, you take it for granted so much and you just assume that it's going to be, like, the definition is what you think it is, but it's not. Right. That's weird.
Also, eggs are one of the only products from animals that don't need to be cruel, right? Chickens will produce eggs regardless.
No matter what.
It's part of their menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you need to impregnate a cow to get milk or anything. So they don't need to be cruel.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, you can give these chickens more square foot of space. Like, come on.
Okay.
if any listeners are part of the food industry, there you go. Be better.
Yeah.
We're coming.
Be better.
All right. This is let's wrap it up there. This has been Food for Thought. Thank you for joining us on the inaugural episode.
Woo!
Thank you, Charlie, and thank you, Kayla.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Absolutely.
Everyone, tell us how we did. Make sure to leave a comment about feedback.
You can find us on the Georgetown Voice website. Find us in the Georgetown Voice podcast feeds.
I mean, if they're listening to this, they've already found us somehow. They've discovered us.
Probably. I guess that's a good point.
But for your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. We want 20 subscribers, 20,000 subscribers.
There you go. Okay.
All right.
See you later.